Good evening, good evening, and welcome to the International Black
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the International Black Summit Radio Show. We are coming to you live from New York, Chicago, and Atlanta. I am Jill Van Leesten, your host, and tonight's topic, we are going to talk about the summit that will be arriving in Alabama. We will be in Birmingham, everybody, the first week of August, and we hope that we see all of you out there to share the experience that the International Black Summit has to offer. So before we get started with the show, I'm going to state the declaration of the International Black Summit. And what we want you to do is listen carefully and see where you find yourself in the declaration. Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Atlanta, Georgia, June 3rd, 2012. North, south, east, west. Above, below, within. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. And I see we have our very own Henrietta Bird out of Chicago. Good evening, Henrietta. How are you?
I'm good, Gio. How are you?
Good. I let the people know that we're going to talk about the wonderful time that we're going to have and just talk about Alabama, and we will be hitting Alabama, Birmingham, the first week of August, and I am so excited.
So with that,
yes, I know that's right. So with that note, I'm going to just go ahead and give it to you, Henrietta.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, Jill is on vacation, really, and she... She's on sabbatical, but she assisted because Jerry is out this week. He might call in, but Glenn is in Hawaii, so everybody is just like all over the place. I haven't checked in with Chakasha. I don't know what state she's in or what country she's in. But somewhere working on the summit, I'm sure. But so that we move on with our program tonight, I would just like to invite you to go to blacksummit.org, our website, and take a look and see if there's a summit chair in your area. If there's not, please give us a call. You can call the radio program anytime during this show tonight, 646-716-9827. If you'd like to request a summit share or a prerequisite course in your area, we'd be more than happy to assist you in putting that together. And we are looking forward to Birmingham, Alabama, where the civil rights era began. We have so much going on in Alabama, and tonight we have as our guest a resident of Alabama, and you will be hearing from her shortly, and she's going to share with us so much of the history, so much of what's going on now, what was going on years ago, and just share some of the things that people who live in the state of Alabama have experienced. And every week from now until August, we will have someone from the Alabama area, the Birmingham area, share with us so that you can ask your questions, any questions you might have about the city, the state, or the civil rights era, or anything you might want to know. We'll have someone from that era or that area to answer your questions and your concerns about it. We've been, as a leadership council, we've been working with going to Alabama, and some wonderful things have come up for us, like people who live in the north who actually did not want to admit that they were from the south, because of the things that they thought were going on or what they thought those things meant. We've discovered that so much of our history is in the South, you know, who we are, who we were created to be, and why we are the way we are still is so important to us, and those things that exist. The people who fought for us, the people who marched for us so that we would have the freedom that we have. We want to hear from those people, and tonight Ms. Jessie is one of those people that will be sharing with us. So this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we are on every Sunday from 7 p.m. Central Time to 8 p.m. Central Time. That's 8 to 9 Eastern Time. That's 6 to 7. No, it's not. It's 5 to 6 Pacific Time. 5 to 6 Pacific Time. So please check the website. You can also listen to the past talk shows on the website. And you can go on blacksummit.org or go to blogtalkradio.com and put Black Summit in, and you can get all of the shows that we've ever recorded and listen to them. And we are doing a countdown to Birmingham, a countdown to Birmingham. We have less than, as of today, we have less than 10 weeks. We have all of June and all of July, and we will be in Birmingham. This weekend, the summit is training facilitators in the city of Atlanta, and are we excited, the facilitator body, coming from all over to come to Atlanta to train ourselves, to train with our colleagues, to train so that we are clear about what life is telling us to bring to the city of Birmingham. And so we will be there for 3 days working to listen, working and listening to find out what life is saying to us so that we can deliver the conversation of the International Black Summit. If you, throughout the evening, want to talk, your mics, the mics are going to be open tonight, so you can just, when you come on, just let me know that you want to, you know, just state your name and that you would like to speak, and we will stop and take questions from anyone. And that's kind of how the show will go tonight. We'll be talking with Mr. Jessie from Alabama, and she will give you some wonderful, wonderful history in just a few moments. We want to make sure that everyone is in tune with voter registration. Please get people out and register them to vote. We don't want to wait until the last moment. We want people to get out now. If you know or you have a car or a van and you can go by and pick up seniors, if you can pick up seniors and take them to register to vote, make sure they have the proper ID. Find out what identification is needed in your area and take a group of seniors to register to vote. You can also find out if they could do voter registration at the facility where the seniors are. So let's get busy and get voter registration going so that in October and November we can concentrate on the vote. Make sure you put that on your to-do list. In all of your organizations, whatever it is that you do, take some time and register people to vote or bring the registration to those people. And we're going to keep up with this voter registration as we get closer and closer to November. That's the other thing that we're working on. So let's get started. And with that interview from our special guest from Jemison, Alabama. Well, she resides in Jemison, Alabama now, but we'll let her talk about the other places in Alabama. Miss Dixie, how are you this evening?
I'm just fine, Henrietta. How are you?
I am wonderful. I thank you so much for joining us and sharing with us so that people all over the world will be able to hear what it's like to be a resident of the state of Alabama, what it's like now, what it was like during the civil rights era, and so that we can hear and listen to the experiences of those who live in the Birmingham area. So, Ms. Jessie, let me begin by asking you, were you born in Alabama, born and raised in Alabama?
Yes, I was born in a little city called Talladega, Alabama.
Oh,
and I'm just to be.
I know Talladega. There's a college there, right?
Yes. Well, I don't know how to much definition about it now because I left there at an early age to a city in the area of Birmingham, which is Leeds, which is about 18 miles from Birmingham. I was mostly reared in different areas because my dad was not able to stay in one place and he had a big family, so we kind of shift around because of a financial condition.
Okay.
But I spent most of my years, my school years in the city of Birmingham.
Okay. And how far back do you remember? Like,
oh, gee, let's go way back.
Okay.
And see, I was born in the year of 1931, so that put me way back during the struggle that we had to survive in the country. So I was born as a third child, and when we moved to different places, then we gathered our education from wherever we could, and we had a hard time getting our books and so forth because they were hand-down books in school. So when I got to Birmingham, I felt that I had really excelled to be the most wealthiest black person there were because I was in a big city of Birmingham, and that's what I saw through the eyes of a child. But in growing up, I realized that it was different. There was different because there were certain issues that I didn't know how to handle because I felt that I was in a place that I shouldn't have been because my parents always taught me that everybody was the same, and I had a struggle understanding the difference of what was being dealt out there. So Birmingham has been a great learning lesson to me. It has been a success story for me today because I see so much different in the world today. Even though the struggle goes on, the light is getting brighter.
I like that. I like that. The struggle goes on, but the light is getting brighter. So
yes. And I think we can illuminate that light by shining ours and polishing our lights and giving the best skills that we can and offering what we can wherever we can. And that will make the world brighter because no one is going to shine bright in our lamps if we don't shine it ourselves. My dad always used to say, we should use lamp lights. And he was always an old scholar on telling people old things that I thought was very odd, and I didn't understand all the things that I understand today being an older person. But he would say, you did not shine your globe. That's why your light is not burning.
Oh.
And he would make us get newspaper and shine and put it in. Most people's treehouse don't understand what I'm saying. But there was a lamp that used kerosene. And he would make us make that globe shine. If it wasn't shining, we would get scolded, maybe whipped, because we're supposed to keep our light shining. He said, because you are blocking what should come through. Get
right.
And shine that globe, and we would do that. And I see that in life today. We need to shine. We need to make our light shine by sharpening the bulb or whatever comes through so we can see clearly what is to be done. Because I couldn't read my lesson with the lamp with a dark shadow over it. So once I shined that light, set it on the table, we had a bright light. So that was just a clear lesson for me.
Isn't that nice? That's something. That's really a great metaphor. Really a great one. And your father, was he born in Birmingham?
No, my father was born in the city where we live. We migrated back to where my father was born in a little place called Jemison, Alabama.
Okay. And Jemison is straight south from Birmingham.
I had to go there to go to school because the area I was going, I didn't get the transportation. So I went to Birmingham, and this is where I stayed until I got married and had a family and finally journeyed away and came back home. So it was just like a kind of a journey, a circle, which brought me back to where I am now in Jemison, Alabama. That was not my birthplace, but it was my father's birthplace.
Okay. And so you went to Birmingham as a young girl. And
yes, it's high school.
And you graduated from elementary school.
I graduated from Parker High School, which still stands. And I'm so proud of Parker High School. They have remodeled it. And I understand it's become a technical training school now that the school's all integrated. But I went to school during the time of segregation. But the school still stands, and it's beautiful. It stands in the same area. However, I see difference around it because development is not as like they were when I was in school. It seems like I saw much beauty, but it's coming back because it's a rebuilding of the area now, which really makes me happy to see that the school that I graduate from is still standing. And I understand they still have reunions, which I haven't been able to attend. But it's standing, and it's prosperous, and it's beautiful. And this is one of the growth I see in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's really good. I know Parker, when I lived in Birmingham, they did have a lot of almost like homecoming, like colleges have homecoming. I know whenever there was a group celebrating some kind of something at Parker High School or, you know, whatever.
Yes.
But Miss Jessie, tell us about what that was like. So Parker was a segregated school.
It was, at the time for me, it was good because I didn't know what I was missing. I didn't know that there was difference. I thought maybe it's just that we were segregated because we were a certain Daddy said we were a certain kind of people. He never brought up anything about color. He would always say, we are a certain kind of people. And Dad always seemed to glorify things. But as I grew up, I see he didn't want to really put bitterness in our hearts because he was always positive about things, which is, you know, I struggle to be today. I kind of miss the calling sometimes, but he could see beauty in anything. And he would tell us, you are a different kind of people, so you can expect to do the things those people do because you are different. And I say, Dad, why are we different? And he would laugh and say, well, look at you. And this is from a little child, I would say grade school. But as I grew up, I was able to, you know, shine a light in the direction of my dad and not for him to be bitter or anything. But I had to make him say, look, Dad, I can't do this because of this. And mm-hmm. I can't go there because of this. Now, why can't I go there because I'm different?
Right. And how would he respond?
My daddy grew up without being educated. So when he taught me my ABCs, and I went to the first, he taught me to read the first book, Dick and Jane. And when, as I went to school, my daddy would always have a Bible open. He never went to school a year in his life. But when he taught me to read, I would sit down and read, as I grew up, the Bible with him. And he learned to write words and pronounce words and break them up. And now he can pronounce better words than I can in the Old Testament, the old those old prophetic names. Daddy can pronounce them wherein it takes me a while to get it out there. And sometimes I miss it. So he learned to read, and he's never read anything but the Bible. I guess this must be about my dad, huh? But let's go on to Herman Allen.
That's okay. He's from Alabama.
But he taught me a lot. He taught me how to survive and how to get as far as I am. I'm 81 years old today, and I'm proud to say that I am not ashamed of my journey.
Okay.
Birmingham has been a focal point. It's been a focal point in my life because this is where I graduated from. I got my learning, and I felt that when I left Birmingham, I was ready for the world.
Hmm.
However, I married and lived there, and there were struggles that I've gone through, but I look at those as stepping stones because today I think is a world that anyone can live in. It's how we condition ourselves to live in it.
Mm-hmm. So after you graduated from Parker, and tell me where Parker is located in Birmingham.
Oh, it's located over there in Smithfield, and I think I remember around the Greymont Avenue area.
Right. Okay, right. That's what I was trying to make sure. So it was kind of over there. Yeah, almost where we were, where we had the prerequisite, right?
Yes.
In that area, it's close to Birmingham Southern.
That proximity, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of just outside the downtown area, just west of the downtown area.
Yes, and you can look. I think north, and you could see the city of Birmingham, the high rise and the beauty of Birmingham. If you go past, in fact, if you don't know where the center of Birmingham is, if you park up, you can look in that direction and just drive in that direction. You're there.
Okay. So, Ms. Jesse, let me ask you this question: with all of the challenges, I'll say that the people in Birmingham overcame, what was it that kept you in that city? Did you ever want to leave?
At the time, no. I love Birmingham
mm-hmm.
because to me it was a great big sparkling city. It was called the Magic City.
Yeah.
And when I would go back to the little city of Jemison to visit little kids that I went to grade school with, I was happy to tell them I live in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Although there was bad things happen in Birmingham, good things happen in Birmingham. So Birmingham to me was the greatest home I knew because as a child, you know, everybody wanted to get away from the country. I was in the big city of Birmingham.
Yeah,
and my struggles in Birmingham were just, I guess, a part of the life, part of living in Birmingham.
Right. And wasn't there a time where Birmingham was a very, very rich area?
Yes. I can remember, I think it's noted for its iron ore. It's known for the, my outstanding points in Birmingham was the Vulcan. They call it Iron Mountain. I think it was, they get iron ore of the mountain. And
uh-huh.
There was a great big plant there, manufacturing plant. I think it was some business called Steel, Sloth Steel. And I remember in high school, as crossing the bridge, looking over that magnificent sight, you could see them pouring iron, red hot iron. And to me, that was just like magic, to see iron melt.
Mm.
And as we would go across the viaduct, you could feel the heat coming through the window of the bus that took us home.
Mm.
Well, Birmingham offered me a lot of experience and beauty. Because once of all, I didn't know you could melt iron. And I saw it melted first in Birmingham, Alabama. And that place is still there. I think they keep it open for tourists. I don't know. It's not destroyed. But it's right up there on First Avenue across the viaduct. As you go towards the Woodlawn, Roebuck, East Lake area, you cross that viaduct. We called it a viaduct. And that sloth manufacturing, it still stands there, although it's not in operation now. But I thought it was a conglomerate business to me. I didn't want to work there, but I just loved to see it because I was wondering how they could stand the heat. I never saw a person, but I could see those big rails going up and the iron being pulled out, and the kids on the bus said, "That's steel. They're melting steel."
That's something. And
so that's still a sight now to see in Birmingham, although it's more sophisticated ways of doing it, or it's moved elsewhere. But it was, to me, it was one of the highlights in Birmingham. Sloth Steel.
Right. Tell me about your first recollection of civil rights, the first thing you remember about civil rights.
Well, I've heard stories, but we was sheltered from it. But when I went to Birmingham and I graduated from school, it was still nice because we were segregated. So I intermingled with my own color, you want to say, because that's what we would call it at the time. So when I got married in the city of Birmingham and I had children, my first time I was hit with the difference between the treatment of black and white, although I read, but I never experienced it until I had gone home and I was doing the struggle of the civil rights before Martin Luther King was known, publicly known. I had come home from Birmingham and I had my four children and my husband was picking me up there at the Greyhound bus station. And when we got there, the station was flooded with water. And there was a lot of corruption, and I saw a lot of debris, and I saw a lot of fire trucks. And my husband ran and said, "Come on, you children, come on. They're killing niggas." This is what he said. So we start running. They done washed them all away. I saw the water there. So when I got home, I got the news on the radio that had been a hose, and this is the time that the dogs was put on the children, and they had washed, put the hose on them and blown them away. You could see it on the news, like they go sliding down the street because of the water hose that was put on them. And we saw the picture. I saw the picture on TV. And I heard it on radio where our TV was so bad you couldn't hardly see it. But at that time, we had a problem getting the black and white color in the TV. But it was on the radio, and it was blatant news, and there was sirens. It was very frightful, and I was glad I got home because when I got home, I realized how bad it could have been if we had gotten there during the time that they put the water hose on the kids. I think it was a contest or protest going on there, and they just put the fire hose and the police dogs, and a lot of people got beat up, and I said, really, it is bad for us. And I was really frightful. And at that time, I realized that I was different. And I thought I was glad I wasn't there because I would expose my kids to that. I don't know if we would have got hurt, but I was just blessed to get home. But that was an experience for me, that when it blatantly hit me in my face, that there is a difference that I can't do what other people do, or certain I will face certain consequences. Like, I was taught not to drink from the fountain.
Mm-hmm.
I will always listen to that because it was just the law we lived by.
Right.
It was something that we had accepted.
Right. How did you feel? Like, what were you thinking about when you watched it on television?
I was petrified.
Mm.
And I had mixed feelings, and I had several. I felt that I was happy to get home. I was blessed that it wasn't for me to be hurt at that time or my kids to experience that, and wish that I could hide it from them and it never happened again. But as they grew up, they learned the truth without me telling them. I never taught them the difference. I was never taught the difference. But they grew to learn the difference, and they would make statements that you can't do that because you know you can't. Kids would pass a fountain. You know you can't drink there. And, you know, kids being defiant, well, why can't I? It's water.
Mm.
But it's have changed now. I was,
right.
I went through a lot of struggles. I did one of the marches with the Kings, but I didn't take the Selma route. But I was just happy. But I couldn't do those things because I was afraid if I get hurt, who's going to take care of my children? I guess
yeah.
That's the fear I had for them and not myself because I had to be responsible for more than me. So I tried to keep myself out of places that and do things that I felt that I should do, but I must not do because of consequence.
Okay.
But Birmingham, not the same place now. That I went away when I got out of, after my kids grew up, and I went to college on the West Coast, and I came back, and it's not the same place. It's different. I can do the things that we couldn't do when I was a child, and I left. I left in order to get a job. I couldn't get a job here, mainly because I just had a high school education, and it demanded a little more than a high school education to get the job that I wanted to support my kids because we were always struggling for a better position in life.
So even then, you needed a bachelor's degree or some higher level of education to get a decent job.
Yes, and I couldn't afford it. But I could afford it when I went away. I was able to attend schools that I wasn't allowed to attend in the southern states, and I found out there were more openings there. However, you know, blatantly say segregation everywhere. You just not have to know. I knew how to live with it because of my upbringing and the consequence of others didn't know how to live by. They suffered because lack of knowledge or rebellious or things like that. I learned you do what you have to do until you can do better.
Okay. You remember that movie, The Great Debaters?
Yes.
It was from Wiley College in Texas, Wiley, Texas. And there's a line in that movie that says we do what we have to do so we can do what we want to do.
Yeah, that's a good saying. That's a true saying.
Uh-huh.
And
so that's what I hear. Yeah, that's what I hear you saying, you know. You did what you had to do to protect your children and you moved on. And so as things progressed, do you remember when the 16th Street Church was bombed?
Yes. At the time the 16th Street Church was bombed, I think I was living in Woodlawn. No, I had moved away. That year I had moved away when they was doing a lot of protests, and I think at the time Martin Luther King was trying to address the issue of, you know, segregation shouldn't be, and I was thinking, how can he do that? He's going to get hurt. You know, and that was a lot of conversation went on, but I admired him. I country is better, and I think Birmingham is better because the better thinking people came to his way of thinking, and they were saying, hey, but we realize that something is not done. We can always say how bad things are, but if we don't do nothing, then we are not a part of the solution. But Martin Luther King made himself a part of the solution. And
yeah.
I remember that. I remember one of the little girls was aware, and my kids was aware. And I'm thinking, are they related to us? I don't know, because we didn't even get around to know who my husband's people were. I would never know that that child that was killed in that raid was related to us. But one of the names did stand out with me was a little girl. Her last name was Ware. And I was thinking, I don't think things could get any worse. But however it did, you know, there were homes destroyed. And we know the stories, the horror stories that you hear about. Sorry to hear about them, but glad that you wasn't close to the market.
Right. Were there people in your area who were organizing, you know, the marches and things? Was there anybody in your area?
There were lots of people, but I couldn't participate because my kids were so small. And I wanted to, but I had a husband that said, don't you go out there.
Right.
So, therefore, I wasn't in the midst of the beatings and the bad things that happened because a lot of things that happened was not ever reported.
Okay.
You know, we have the news media now that really hits the mark. They can cover a lot of things in years now that wasn't covered in years then, but I think enough was exposed.
That's right. So as time went on and your children were able to go to school and, you know, all of that, there was never a time where you weren't allowed to go to school. Is that correct?
Well, the only time I wasn't allowed to go to school is the school I wanted to go to.
Oh.
But there were always schools that we could go. You mean my condition or
your condition.
Oh, yeah, there were times that I wanted to go to school and I didn't go to school. I remember having to study from a lady, and God wish I knew where she were now, but she would be an old lady, and I would picture myself as saying, as I'm 81 at the time, she was in her 50s or 60s. You know, we always say, oh, she's gone now. But I made many attempts to find her but never found her. But she taught me typing. And I was able, when I went to West Coast, to get a job as I think it was called Key Punch Operator at the time. It was because of my typing skill. At the time, I felt that, great, I have a skill. I can type. So I went to night school. I was only able to go to college when I left the state. When I left the state and went on the West Coast, I was able to go to college because I can go at night. And then eventually I was able to get a degree. And that really made me feel proud of myself. Mostly because I knew when I came back home I had something to offer, because I always intended to return home because my mom and my dad was here. They was in the city of Jemison, Alabama, where I reside now. And I always said, well, when I get old, like go away and work and get rich, you know. When I come home, I can do this and do that. I was able to do some of the things I wanted to do, but not as much as I wanted to do. But I think it's just because of I had a vision. I had a vision that things was not going to always be where I couldn't do, but I could do if I kept the struggle up. And that was my hope, and that I could always come back and be the person I wanted to be and live the life I wanted to live and have no fear of where I would go. I wouldn't have to go in this area. I wouldn't have to go up front. Now I can walk in stores in Birmingham that I couldn't walk in when I was a child. Especially restaurants. That was places you pass, you smell the food, you just go to the hot dog stand, and that was great.
Yeah. Well, let's just take a break for a moment to identify that this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we are on the air with one of the residents of Alabama, specifically in Jemison, Alabama. Her name is Miss Jessie, and she is a member of the Summit, International Black Summit body. And she's sharing with us some of her experiences living in Birmingham. Well, Miss Jessie, you've done the prerequisite course and some of the other courses over the past years. Tell me what you feel, how you feel the International Black Summit, what gift it has to bring to the state of Alabama, the city of Birmingham.
I think it would bring an eye open to in a lot of ways that we see ourselves and a lot of things that we do as a people. I think it's long overdue, and this is something that could have gave us wings even though we were in flight to where we wanted to go, but it could have given us wings if we had the opportunity to be in conversation with each other, because at that time we could be more supportive. And this is a way, I think, of just bringing all the rich minds and all the things, it's like a sharpened tool, I think. I see it as a sharpened tool we have. We have what it takes to be in this life, but it will sharpen our tools so we can make it easier for us and the community and the people that we know and the families that we have. It will teach, I would think it would help us just to brighten our globe. If I go back to what I was saying, to make our light shine, to
well,
if a person is good, they use the gravitate towards good.
Okay. Well, let me just stop for a moment to see if there's anyone who has a question or a comment at this time. Your mics are on, so if you do, you may, you know, just let us know who you are and what your question or comment is.
At this time, there are people on the line, but there are no comments. So thank you. Back to you, Henrietta.
Okay. Thanks, Jill. So, Ms. Jessie, you know that the International Black Summit annual event, which is the first weekend in August, August 2nd through the 5th, is a conversation. And it's a conversation that's given by Life to people of Black African descent. And as this conversation unfolds itself, there are things that we discover, things that we distinguish. And we have a group of tools that we use called distinctions. And those distinctions allow us to communicate with each other at a level that we may not normally communicate, you know, a different level, a deeper level. We also have a prerequisite course that focuses on authentic listening so that we are able to listen. And Ms. Jessie, if you could share with the listeners, you know, some of your experiences with the prerequisite course or being on the calls that we have, or anything that you would like to share that you think might be of interest to our listeners.
Well, I think it's very important, like those nice words you said, listen. And it has helped me to be a better listener. And I think sometime when the conversation is going on, instead of me saying more, I learn more by listening.
Mm.
It's just like when I listen, it's just like absorbing what's being said, and it gives me time to think rather than getting ahead of the story.
Okay.
So I appreciate the space that we have when we communicate with each other, that we do listen. Then we can share better Because sometimes if we're listening with something on our mind, how are we going to answer the question? We are not listening because we are preoccupied with how we're going to respond before the statement is over. I learned that the hard way because I've always run my mouth and talk, and I realized, hey, I didn't get the whole subject. I didn't get the story before I proceeded to give an answer. And that's helped me a great deal. And I love the respect that we have and show for each other and how we can disagree in such a friendly manner, how we can disagree, and I can see everybody that's grasping for a better way to do things and to understand things and to make things better. So we give in to a lot of things, even when that may be something that you totally disagree with, we handle it with respect.
Right. Yeah, I love that. We disagree, and we respectfully disagree. Respectfully disagree. I invite everyone to go to blacksummit.org and register for the International Black Summit. Read thoroughly the registration form. And if you have any questions, you can contact us via the website or through a Blog Talk Radio. You can contact us. And there's information on how to register. You can register for the prerequisite, or you can take the prerequisite on August 2nd, which is the Thursday before the summit starts. That registration is $100 for adults, $25 for 17 and under is $25. And from 8 to 17, ages 8 to 17, that's our youth age, 8 to 17. And so for a youth prerequisite, it would be $25. For adult prerequisite, it is $100. And so keep looking at the website so that you can see the different summit shares and the different prerequisites around the country that you might attend. If you've already attended a prerequisite, call your friends and your family members and invite them to take one. If you know of an area where you can get 10 people or more to take a prerequisite, like I said, once again, we'll be more than happy to assist in that gathering of people and collecting their information, their email addresses, and bringing a wonderful team of facilitators into your city and doing a summit share or doing a prerequisite course. So keep in touch with us through our website, blacksummit.org. Ms. Jessie, when you know, every year we have a question or a declaration, and this year it was a declaration we worked with all year long. And this year, the declaration was, be with what is. What is available when I be with what is? What is the gift? What is available when I be with what is? What is the gift? And I know you've worked with that declaration yourself. Can you share some of the things that have unfolded from your working with that declaration?
When I be with what is?
Yes.
When I be with what is, I can clearly see because I don't see an imagination. I see what's there. And that's what I try to deal with, what's there and not what I want to be there, but what is really there. Like, I am truly a black person. I've got to be that person and no one, nothing else. Like, I'm truly a female. I want to be with what I am. Like, I'm a mother. And I want to be best of those things to make it better. And if I be what is, I can always journey towards what I want it to be and make it greater.
Okay. Thank you so much for sharing that. you know, be with what is, like what's available. Not when I try to change it, not when I try to cover it up, not when I, you know, but what is available when I be with what is, you know, whatever the whatever life has handed me, you know, what is available when I be with it. And thank you so much for that explanation, for sharing that information with us. What are some of the gifts that you see occurring for Birmingham in the month of August? When you think about the summer coming to Birmingham, what do you visualize? What do you see?
I see, I can imagine it being a great gathering of people. There are a lot of great minds, and there are a lot of people with minds that needs to be, well, how am I going to say this? There are people that just, we need to I see a conversation that needs to happen, because
mm-hmm.
even though it is happening between people, but I see people of all of life, all business, and all of that. I see it coming together, and I see whenever we come together, we always have something. People come together, always have something to offer, because each mind builds upon others. You may have an idea, and another person may have an idea, and there may be a consolidation of ideas that can go forth as making a betterment of whatever we want to accomplish in our environment or our homes or our families. And when we are bind together as people should be, and we open up our hearts and our souls and our mind, that can only be a true picture of what we want to be, and we can strive towards making it happen.
So it sounds like one of the lines in the declaration, we declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. That's what I see when I think about Birmingham, when I think about the summit annual event, August 2nd through the 5th at the Doubletree Hotel. I visualize, I see that area just overflowing with people of Black African descent from all different countries and cities and states, and just flooding that area with the consciousness of the summit, and coming and gathering and celebrating, acknowledging and praising one another for the work that we've done throughout the year. And sitting down with each other, communicating, working things out, dancing and praising, and the youth just all coming together and learning about each other. We're right on the campus of University of Alabama in Birmingham, the UAB campus, and we're also right on the south side. So just that entire environment is going to be so uplifted from all of the consciousness that's coming into the city of Birmingham, so that we can be with, we can see what's available when we be with what is, and we can manifest and realize the gift. Ms. Jessie, you have truly been a gift to us this evening. I thank you for all of your wisdom and your willingness to share with us. We are looking forward to seeing you in person. And you hear her on the radio, but you should see her in person. She's a wonderful spirit, and just as willing to share in person as she has been tonight. So make sure, if you're listening, that you get a chance to meet Ms. Jessie when you come to the annual event, August 2nd through the 5th in Birmingham, Alabama, at the Doubletree on 20th Street, right there on UAB's campus. We are looking forward to a large number of people coming, and we ask that you register so that we can prepare properly for everyone who will come. Just go to blacksummit.org and complete the registration. If you can, you can do it two ways. You can do it via the internet, or you can download the registration form and mail it in to our address, our post office box, or you can just write us and send your check in. The recommended contribution for seniors, and seniors are 55 and older, the recommended contribution is $200. For adults 17 to 55, or 18, I should say, 18 to 55, it's $250. For the young adults, which is 18 to 25, it's $150. And for youth, ages 8 to 17, it's $100. And you can make payments if you need to. If you want to register and you would like to pay a little bit every couple of weeks until then, send your payments to International Black Summit, Post Office Box 20443, New York, New York, 10025-1513. Or go to blacksummit.org and fill out everything, and you can pay using your credit card or debit card through PayPal. So whatever way you would like to do it, it's available for you. The 22nd Annual Summit Event, August 2nd through 5th, in Birmingham, Alabama, at the Doubletree Hotel. Please make your reservations for at the Doubletree so that you can get the discounted rate. You can get that rate up until July 1st, and you can do that with your debit card or your credit card, and they simply hold the reservation. They do not hold any money. They just hold a reservation for you, and I think you have until like 48 hours, but check that when you make your reservation at the Doubletree. And whatever you do, don't miss the 22nd Annual International Black Summit event in Birmingham, Alabama. Ms. Jessie, thank you so much. Do you have any closing remarks for our listeners?
I would just like to see everybody there. I'm sure I'll see someone that I have long missed and don't know where you are.
That's right.
I want to know who made it at least 81. So look, hope to see you there. And I thank you, Henrietta, for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you. It has been my pleasure. Thank you so very, very much for all of the work that you've done and all of the work you continue to do to help us and the host team with the gathering of people and informing people of what's going on in Birmingham this year. So thanks again to Jill for doing the technical work for us tonight. Ms. Jessie, I thank you and I love you. I appreciate you and look forward to seeing you soon. And to all of you, make sure you go to blacksummit.org and register for the 22nd Annual Summit event. God bless. Good night. And next Sunday, same time, 7 p.m., Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. We'll be back with you next week. God bless and good night.
Good night.
Good night.